Committee on Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs, Tuesday, May 18th, 3:30 p.m., hearing room D.
We're going to call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs to order at the subcommittee. We're going to open a public hearing.
That's the vice chief.
Senator Lynn here.
No, he's gone.
Okay. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 950. Please, Mark, come speak to us.
I recommend Mark Seegers and then the list of eight, Senator Lim. Senator Lim regrets that he's unable to be here. He's mourning the loss of his mother, who passed away Sunday. Even though he can't be here, he wanted me to express that he is strongly in support of Senate Bill 950, and I'd like to see it passed out of committee with a two-pass recommendation. Thank you.
Great. Any questions of that question, Barr?
Thank you. I recognize you're not the senator and you didn't sponsor the bill, but can you maybe give me some rationale of why we would do this?
Mr. Chair, in the fire. Can I pass this on to Cheryl Reeves, who's the administrator, if you have?
Yes, is Cheryl here?
Do what you want. That's Cheryl's decision.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Members of the committee. My name is Cheryl Reeves. I'm the committee administrator for Trade and the Senate Trade and Economic Development Committee. I'm happy to respond to your question, Representative Beyer, to the extent that I'm able to. Senator Lynn introduced this bill because he believes that the Asian American population in the state of Oregon has made a large contribution, both historically and in our current society and economy as well. There are many reasons that the Asian Americans are an important citizen membership group in our state. We have a population of between 35,000 and 40,000 Asian Americans in the city of Portland, more than 100,000 throughout the state of Oregon, and that was from a census that was taken 2 years ago. The Asian countries, of course, are one of our largest international trading partners, as you all are well aware, but it is the belief of the senator and the members of the committee that multicultural events in our state and in our communities help to bring mutual understanding and sharing between the various diversity groups within the communities and only encourage cooperation and good citizenship among the citizens.
Thank you.
I think the belief is that the schools and communities can encourage this by having a particular month designated.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Reeves. A
couple of questions. We have other months that are designated for other groups.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, I believe that we do. I cannot tell you exactly what they are, but I believe that we do celebrate a Black American Month and perhaps a Hispanic American Month.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Beck.
Is there ever a problem with creating multiple groups in any one month? And can one month be given multiple designations for celebratory purposes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beck, I don't think I can answer that question, but I can't imagine that there would be a particular conflict for doing so.
Mr. Chair, my concern would be I enjoy having our proclamations around the building, and but when we start putting things in the statute, if for some reason we can only have one group recognized per month, that would only give us 12 groups to recognize in any given year. I'd be a little concerned about that. So
maybe we start making the second week of July, and
we'd run out of October. We'd run out of room pretty soon, so I guess that'd be my only concern.
Thank you, Representative Beck. Any other questions? Representative Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a technical question on line 6 of the bill when you talk about referring to the meeting of Asian Americans and referring to the ORS 185620. Do you know what specifically that ORS, I don't have it in front of me, what that looks out?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, could you repeat the line, please?
Okay. On the bill, line 6, at the very end, text ORS 185620.
No, I'm sorry, I cannot answer that. I don't have the site either.
Okay. Thank you. Let's go look at that.
Thank you very much. Senator Fisher. We're in the public hearing on Senate Bill 950.
Thank you, Chair Starr and members of the committee. I just wanted to come and lend my support here to Senate Bill 950. I don't think it makes me exclusive for the Asian community, but it gives them an opportunity to gather together and to have some special emphasis on their causes and their issues each year. And I know that there's other groups, including my own nursing home association, who may have suspected much for, so for our long-term care. So I think that these things often have to do multiple choices, just like many of us have birthdays on the same day. One of our birthdays doesn't usually exclude anybody else's. So I think it's kind of that same thing. But I think this is a good bill, and it's a good opportunity for these folks to do it. I know in my district. Excuse me, I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Bill Fisher from the Douglas County, Josephine and Jackson County, District 23. We have a very, very active group of Asian folks down there that have gotten together and put together some real nice programs, and they're taking an active interest in the issue statewide. And it really brought to my attention how many of these folks there are when I wasn't really aware that we had so many of them in our community. And they get together, and it gives them an opportunity to have a little emphasis on some of their traditions and things. And I saw some very fine programs attending these meetings. And so I was very happy to be able to support this idea and give them the recognition that I think will help them. And you know, we don't often think about it ourselves. We may be from one state or another, but you don't think about the fact that these people come from a whole other country. I mean, it's not like they can just go back and forth, and some of them don't even have really good ways of corresponding, even due to problems in their former countries and different things. They just really have an isolation out here, and it's nice to have them have a little emphasis for this. And I think it was brought home to us in the Senate here with Senator Lynn losing his mother and not really realizing what a thing it was to her. He was planning to take her over to back to Korea to pass away over in her home country. And unfortunately, before they were able to do that, she passed away here. And so they're having to take her over there for burial. And he's gone and not able to be here today to carry on and support this bill. And it came to me as he told about things around the Senate floor, how important it was for them to have the ties with the country, and how important it is here, because there aren't as many of them, and they're literally not just one state away from home or across the United States or somewhere. They can hop on a plane and get there in a couple hours or so. They're literally a heavy day's travel away, and an expensive day's travel away in comparison to what we are. So I would urge your support for this.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you for the time for your
great. Take questions? Representative Vias, questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it's more of a comment than a question. Senator Fisher, to me, your testimony exactly highlighted my feelings of why we don't need this bill. You said that you didn't realize those people were even there. in your own community. My feeling is just that. We all should be colorblind to what people look like, and these people, all of us are Americans, and we are all, I mean, we don't have European Americans. All of our forefathers at some point in time, most all of our forefathers left a country somewhere to come here. We should be colorblind and not celebrate that, but celebrate who we are today, which is Americans. And I think it's perfect. We people, all of society, we want to fit together and not have to recognize certain segments of heritage or a certain segment of race. And I think that's what this does. It points out a race, and I think it just divides populations. And I'm sorry, that's my feeling on it, and I guess disagree with the need for this bill, because I think you perfectly said that, you know, we're all together in this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, I don't disagree with you in theory. I think when we get into the practice of some of these things, that there still is a need for recognition and for a little help from government to tip the scales for them. When I said I wasn't aware of them, I am aware of them. I wasn't aware of their cultures and the things that was brought out as I attended their programs and things that they have. And they were not doing it as an idea to include anybody, because almost 50% or 80% of these people are wives of servicemen, people that have brought them over here to join and be part of our country. They are part of our country. They also have a heritage of their own, and I think that I've never had a chance to travel in Asia, and so I have never personally been able to see their customs. This kind of gives a little chance for those of us sometimes that don't have those opportunities for them to kind of concentrate or think about the chance to see these things. And I certainly respect your feelings, and I have kind of the same feelings too, because I happen to have ancestors that came some generations ago from Germany. I don't know sickness about my German ancestry or customs or anything else, and I can't even order reasonably off a German restaurant, other than asking somebody about it. But I don't think that I look upon this as something that would try to divide or segregate them out, or, you know, do that. I would look at it as a beneficial educational thing for all of us to recognize that we are all a little bit different, but that we are part of a whole and can get along and can share and do things. So I certainly wouldn't deny you your right to upon it here as you wish. I guess, you know, that's what makes America great.
Thank you, Senator Fisher. Any further questions for Senator Fisher on Senate Bill 950?
Real quickly, Mr. Chair, I know we're in a hurry, but Senator Fisher, did anybody discuss, are you on the Senate committee?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Was there any discussion about the advisability of putting this in statute versus doing a resolution? I just looked at the statute that is amending. It doesn't really indicate that there are other groups that are acknowledged in the statute. I just wonder whether there was any talk of that, or whether this is a typical way to acknowledge commemorative or establish commemorative months, and whether that's done more typically through a resolution or memorial.
I don't recall, Mr. Chair, Representative Becker, I don't recall that was ever discussed, to my knowledge. I wouldn't say that my memory is 100%, but that doesn't ring a bell with anything that was discussed as far as the correctness of putting it in an ORS or the correctness of having a governing proclamation or whatever the case might be. It was
where it came.
Yeah.
Do you have any comment on that?
Representative Beck, we have contacted one side of council to find out if there's other ethnic groups that have had this kind of recognition.
Right.
They can report to us.
I understand. I don't object to this at all. I would just, if this is a Senate bill, it's going to pass, and
right.
I just want to make sure we're not starting, and maybe that's fine. Maybe we won't put this
in. Okay, thank you, Representative Beck. We're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 950. We're going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 951. Senator Fisher, stay right where you are. Please feel free to address the committee on Senate Bill 951.
Mr. Chair and the committee, Senator Bill Fisher from District 23, Douglas County, and parts of Joe King's Jackson County. This again is a bill that came from the Trade and Economic Development Committee. This modifies the Commission on Asian Affairs. It brings it into alignment with the Commission on Black Affairs, the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, and the Commission for Women. These are advocacy commissions, and their role is to work for implementation of economic, social, legal, and political equality of the group represented by each commission. They were came into being under a little different wordings that brought them into conflict with some of the other areas of economic development and so forth, and this kind of lines that up and straightens that up and also puts them on the same footing and with the same basic goals and directions and rules and regulations of the other commissions. And in addition, it allows two ex officio members to be appointed, one by each of the Speaker of the House and Senate President from amongst the legislative elected officials of their group. It also provides for the appointment of the commission members around the state on a fairly even basis so that all areas of the state are represented, and it does that by putting in the statute that at least one member of the commission will be from each of the five U.S. representative districts in the state. And that's basically what this does.
Thank you, Senator. Questions for Senator Fisher, Representative Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Fisher, I'm supportive of this bill. Just for way of information, though, was there any testimony in opposition to this bill in the Senate when it appeared before the Senate committee?
As I recall, there were several things that came out as the bill originally stood, and they were amended out, I believe, to the satisfaction of most of the parties. And as I recall, I apologize for not being as well prepared as I would have liked to have been for this thing. I've been trying to be four places at once today. But I don't recall any particular problem at all on the floor carrying this bill. It's got good support, and basically, to my knowledge, I don't think anybody opposed it the way it was brought back. The way it was first originally, it was viewed as putting the commission in an arena supporting and trying to encourage trade and economic development and things more than what they thought that it was supposed to do in the governor's office, I believe. And so it was, as far as I know, amended out to, as I say, I'm kind of pinch hitting here. I would have expected Senator Lim to probably bring this to you much better than I can, but try to do the best for me today.
Well, thank you very much for your
time. Any further questions, Senator Fisher?
Thank you. I'd like to thank you very much for the opportunity to be here before you in free courtesy.
Okay. Have Katie Silva, like to testify on Senate Bill 961.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Katie Koba, and actually wearing two hats here today, both as Director of Executive Appointments for the Governor and also an Economic Development Policy Advisor. Senate Bill 951, as appears before you amended, received the support of the Governor's Office. We did work with Senator Lim in proposing some amendments that clarifies the role of the Commission on Asian Affairs versus the activities that the Economic Development Department undertakes in its mission. And I think that the bill before you will help both the Commission on Asian Affairs clearly understand what their role is and help the Economic Development Department understand how they need to work with the Commission on Indian Affairs. To answer your question, Representative Devlin, I did attend the hearing where the bill was amended, and there was no opposition in that hearing to these amendments.
Great. Any questions for the committee? Thank you very much. Mark, would you like to testify?
For the record, my name is Phil Mark Heger, legislative aide for Senator Lynn. Senator Lynn is also strongly in support of Senate Bill 971 and urges you to pass recommendation. And if you have any more questions, again, I would refer you to Harold B., the Administrator of the Trade and Economic Development Committee.
Great. Thanks, Mark. There's no one else on the list that's not to speak in public hearing on Senate Bill 951. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on Senate Bill 951? Mm-hmm. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 951. Mm-hmm. Work session. We'll open a work session on Senate Bill 951.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 951 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Committee members, we have a motion on the floor for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that the governor's office is on board with this. I will not get into broader issues as to the various commissions that we have. But, I'll go ahead and vote to send it to the floor.
Okay. Any other discussion? Kirk? All right. Committee of Candidates.
Where are we sitting, sir?
I mean, we're sitting here.
Hey.
We're not having
convene this hearing of the House Rules Election Public Affairs Committee and we left you in work session on Senate Bill 950.
51.
Right. We need to close the work session on Senate Bill 951 and open the work session on Senate Bill 950. Mr. Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 950A in both versions to the bill with the Duke House recommendation.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there any discussion?
Yes, there is.
There's some discussion. Mr. Scott?
Discussion during the recess about conceptually amending it from months to a week. That would bring it more into congruity with what other kinds of things we have in the statutes right now.
Further discussion?
Chair.
Mr. Manick, Mr. Beck.
Mr. Chairman, I think we ought to repeal all statutes establishing months and weeks and days, other than national holidays and state holidays. I will give this full courtesy vote so you don't have to wait for some other member to come in. And it's not meant to be in any particular reflection on any particular group such as Asian Americans. I just think that we should not be doing this by statute. And so I'll be voting no on the House floor, but I'll give it a fair few votes today.
This is Byer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Other than that, I've pretty much said everything I wanted to say. I guess I won't give a fair vote. I just, there's no reason I can see to put this in statute. I support Asian Americans and I support all Americans, whether they have a hyphenation in front of their heritage or not. But this is not the thing that I just don't think is something this body needs to be doing at this time. I don't know. I'm just disturbed by what we're even going down this road. It doesn't solve problems. It creates problems. So I'm a no here and I'm a four.
Griffin Beck.
Well, I in response to Griffin Starr's conceptual amendment, I think that there's a great idea. This would be the first group that we'd be commemorating a month that in statute. I'm not sure we need to start doing that. And I think we can accomplish much by amending this. I would say that if we're going to pick a week, from Cinco de Mayo, the first week of May, maybe we can avoid the first week of May. In case someone comes back to us claiming the first week of May, we might want to take the second week. We can take the last week of May, which is my birthday, and
there we go. Thank you. That's a devil.
Mr. Chairman, I respectfully disagree with my colleague to the left, Representative Byer. I don't really have a problem with the bill. If we want to conceptually amend it to a week, that's fine also. I think of myself, always as an American first, but I still think of myself to some respect as an Irish American because that's the heritage of my family, even if it is 5-6 generations, from the time of immigration to this country. So I don't particularly have a problem with the bill. If you want to conceptually amend it, I think we could do that simply by just conceptually saying, we'll just do it wherever it needs to be done in the bill, the second week or the third week in May. So who's ever made the conceptual amendment if they wanted to change their amendment to that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Devlin.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Scar?
I move we suspend the rules for purposes of conceptually amending Senate Bill 950.
Mr. Chair? We have a motion on the floor. The maker of that motion would have to withdraw his motion if we're going to amend the bill before we move it.
Mr. Devlin?
Okay. There were two, my motion originally, then with the conceptual, then in the form of a motion or just a suggestion. Okay, I will remove my original motion then to refer it to the floor with a Duke House recommendation.
All righty. You didn't start.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules for persons that conceptually amending the Senate Bill 950.
Okay, so I have a motion, of course, to suspend the rules to the purpose of conceptually amending Senate Bill 950. Is there any objection? Amen. So moved.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we
conceptually amend Senate Bill 950 by changing it from Asian American Heritage Month to Asian American Heritage Week, and have the drafter change the language to make that work. Do we want to specify a specific week in May?
We have. Yeah. Conceptual amendments need to be 30 precise, actually.
How about the third week in May? About the time we come to the floor?
Third week in May.
Can you discuss this in May?
Well, back to this whole topic. My friends from Guam would probably resent being called Asian Americans. Since 1898, they've been American Americans. They may be Chamorro, but they're not Asian Americans. My friends from Saipan would say that they're Chamorro, but they also have Japanese heritage. My friends from Japan would insist that while they are Asian, that they would prefer to have their ethnic heritage more specifically recognized. We could begin talking about the various Pacific Islanders who I think would tell you that they are Pacific Islanders of various tribal groups or regions, and they are not Asians. We could go on and on. But my Filipino-American friends tell me, and we have a Filipino-American society here in Oregon, they don't call it the Filipino-American Asian-American Society. And I'm being critical because I think we've taken one of the most massive geographic areas of the world, with probably two-thirds of the world's population, and come up with a term to relate to some ethnic heritage that doesn't exist. I would like to know how we could have a week or a month to celebrate Asian American Heritage Month if you started talking about the various tribes within China. A Chinese American is even too broad a term. And I am being critical because I think that it's appropriate for us to be very sensitive to ethnic heritage. But when we start setting up an official program for recognizing these various heritages, I think we need to be very careful. Is it being done because of political power and moxie, or is it being done because of percentage of population? And I could half-jokingly point out that I could say that I'm Irish-American, but I'm also British-American, and how do I figure that out? This, to me, is disturbing. I think that it's important to celebrate our heritage, but I think it should be a groundswell from the community doing it on themselves, for themselves, with themselves, not some government-sanctioned program. And we may have done this in other areas in the past. I think we should regret that a little bit, but I'll stop spouting off, and as I said before, I will give the committee a courtesy vote to send this to the floor so the whole body can debate the issue. Thank you.
This is Byron.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, once again, Representative Manis beating the front for most everything. I guess all I can say is to the conceptual amendment for the week is better than a month. It's still not good. I, you know, being from German-American descent, you know, where is it going to stop? It's just that simple. I mean, this is just, as I repeat, this committee has important issues to discuss, and I don't think this is one of them. I'm disturbed that we're going down this road, but I don't object to the amendment.
I think since there is significant resistance to the bill on the committee, if President Starr be willing to withdraw his motion, I think we'll set this over and ask Senator Lim, I think he's logged to the committee. Should he be able to find the votes on the committee, we'll bring it back. A little more consensus on the committee that can be developed. We'll bring it back for further work at that time. But if President Starr would be kind enough to withdraw his motion, we'll just close the work session and move on. So, what's the comment? And
let's add to the record, because I looked up, and the staff just brought me the ORF, which is on line 6, the meaning of Asian Americans. It doesn't go into what Representative Mannix was describing. It is broadly defined as Asian Americans mean a resident of the United States who is of Asian ancestry. So I don't know if that helps or hurts you, Representative Mannix, but it's pretty new.
Thank you very much, Mr. Edwards, and you will close the work session on Senate 950.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you. And move down to House Bill 3015. And the other sign that you do is not for the 15.
And we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3050, and more to do with the chairman.
Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 3015 creates a public election fund and appropriates funds from finance from certain statewide legislative offices. There's an amendment to this bill that removes that language, and the bill amendments then change the bill to be assigning the responsibility of the legislative administration to handle staff explanatory statements under Chapter 251 and financial impact statements under Chapter 250 of the ORS. This is a companion piece of legislation with SCR 3, which has been passed out of the committee and the Senate with all the yeas. It's scheduled for the Senate floor on Thursday. And what this change does is it adds 15 days to the Secretary of State's office with no change in the timetable for these petitioners in the initiative process. This came out of a community forum dealing with initiative reform and recall processes.
And we have a letter that's been distributed to the committee from Secretary Kiesling. And you can be as pleased that we are considering these amendments. And we have no one signed up to testify. Is it, are the gas and amendments on the table, Kevin? Okay. Is anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on the gas and amendments to House Bill 3015?
Mr. Chairman.
Person Devlin.
Mr. Hansen, who's one of the staff members with the Secretary of State, indicated that he would be watching this hearing on television if the Secretary of State fully supported the amendments that were being offered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mr. Committee gets these amendments.
No comments.
I'll give you just a moment to look these over, and if there's some comfort with the members of the committee, we can proceed. If not, we can set this over for further work on Thursday.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Manning.
I noticed that the Secretary of State this evening expresses disappointment for using House Bill 3015 as the vehicle for this. And I don't have any judgment about that. Is this a hint for him that he'd rather not have us proceed at all with this measure?
It's not my understanding. I think the measure dealing with public financing of campaigns, those may be considered unfortunate, but it does have the right relating clause of this is.
Mr. Chair, if the sponsor of the original bill is that disappointed, or is there ED or another bill in the committee for voting direction?
I believe we used that.
I still have one.
I will hear. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, also, I don't mind saying that I'm totally opposed to public financing of campaigns. I think it turns the democratic process on its head and turns government over to the special interests who already supposedly control it, because then they get to pay for the other special interests to carry on, et cetera, et cetera. We could have a great debate about that topic, but if people want to send us letters expressing disappointment, I can understand that they have a different perspective. Maybe I've had my Cheerios today or my Wheaties or whatever, but I'd be really willing to take on that topic any time as the government subsidies of elections. The proposal that Secretary Kiesling has sent to us is just fine. It's just the fact of sanctimonious commentary in his letter that sort of set me off.
Well, thank you for offering the benefit of the comment.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Devlin.
I think although both writers have expressed their regret, the Secretary of State has indicated his support for the amendments that are being offered, and I think it's an important bill, and we should pass it out if the committee is comfortable today with it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Devlin.
Ready to go to work session. Let me move this one.
Okay. Well, then, does Mr. Hansen wish to have any comments on the record? Nope. Okay. I hope it's on the record. We will close the hearing and open the work session on House Bill 3015.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to move House Bill 3015 to the floor as is.
I bet you would.
I'm going to get serious.
You are.
We can have fun with that.
We're in work session.
We have a motion on the table.
We have a motion on the table. Let's see.
The motion is to send it to the floor, right?
To the floor, so as it is, without amendment.
Without a recommendation, I notice also, Mr. Sheriff.
Mr. Chairman, are you ready for another motion?
Yes, I am, Representative Mack.
I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3015.
So are you amending the previous motion?
Yes.
So we have an amendment on before the motion has been amended that we move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3015. Any discussion?
Can we do that? Because that's another rule.
Mr. Chair, I think we have to vote on the first motion first. I believe the motions can be amended.
Yeah, one motion right after the other. You take the last one given.
But the motion is not in order if it's not dealing with the bill. The motion to amend would change the bill. And that's not a motion that is in order. We have a motion to move a bill on the table.
It's a vote.
The motion to amend, the motion would be to change the wording of the motion.
Well, I believe that the motion to amend actually, a motion can be amended, you know, that's right.
Mr. Chair, if someone had dealt with this not too long ago,
you're all right.
We could get a representative of the
first office. Okay, well, then, well, what we will do then.
Mr. Chairman, I will help you by withdrawing my motion.
Very much.
We can cease to name them. And we all have a record vote.
There we go. Okay, is there any objection?
Yeah.
There's a lot of objections. So, Mr. Wells, you please call the roll.
We're voting on the motion to move the bill.
Representative
Excuse.
Representative
Beck?
Aye. Representative Byers?
No.
Representative
Kevlin? Mr. Chairman, you didn't allow for time for explanation, but I'll vote yes. I'll make the case like I would amend the bill on the Senate side to make it.
Representative Edwards?
No.
Representative Gardner?
Not having had a public hearing on this, nor to adequately hear the bill, no.
No.
No. Motion not having carried. Within that,
I move the Dash 1 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
I'll give a motion to move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3015. Any discussion? Kevin, please call roll.
Representative Atkinson?
Excuse.
Representative
Atkinson? Some amendments, Mr. Chair?
You have.
Representative Evans? Aye.
And Dash 1 amendments are carried to House Bill 3015.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Manning.
I move that we refer House Bill 3015 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
We refer. And the original bill had a referral to Ways and Means, and I believe that's been rescinded in the same motion.
We include a rescission of the referral to Ways and Means.
Alrighty, colleagues, I have a motion for us to move House Bill 3015 to the floor of the due pass recommendation and rescind the referral to Ways and Means. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so moved. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3015. Any volunteers for Carrier?
Devlin?
You're at camp.
I promise you that you're going to get this version here. I want
you to get
what?
Okay.
I would like to add the original one for it. All right.
There's two other items on our agenda today.
The first step.
Let's jump into 2007 for amendments. Let's open we have a 2007 scheduled for a work session only today, and we'll open that work session in 2007. Yes, Mr. Moore, please give us an update on the status. What are we up to? The dash 19 at
the dash 19. Mr. Chair, committee members, staff knowledge, there are now 19 amendments to House Bill 2007, of which Amendments 11, 12, 14, 16, 17, 18 have not been disclosed yet as to who the authors are. The Dash 19 amendment was received far before the meeting today. It primarily deals with the request of Children First for Oregon. And the chair has an amendment that he will introduce to the committee.
Yes, the Dash 15 amendment.
And Senator Devlin has an amendment he's going to introduce to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, we will not be introducing our amendment at this time. We may introduce that at a later date.
Okay.
Also, Mr. Chair, the national amendment was an economic indicator that has not been adopted, but was asked for the Speaker's office to be included in the amendment.
And the Dash 8, I believe, are the revised economic indicator amendments that would be preferred. Okay. And the Dash 15 colleagues that are before you, with some hand and growth hand markings on the bill, a few hand changes, include providing a 7% and not to exceed $10 million to the Holding Hill Science University Intellectual Capital Fund to be matched at a rate of 2-1. And you have that for your consideration. Mr. Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, by way of clarification, is that the committee administrator's understanding that every one of these amendments is rather cumulative, and they're not cumulative, I mean in the sense they are distinct amendments, so that no amendment takes into consideration previous amendments that have been made,
correct.
But legislative council has a complex that each one is produced.
Correct.
Okay.
And if there are some fine-tuning being done on several amendments done in legislative council as we speak, so we will not be able to move this bill today, but it is my intention to move the bill on Thursday. Any discussions, members of the committee? And the amendments to 2007. Mr. Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too have two amendments being worked on in LC that I'd like to bring forward on Thursday. They're
already
not ready yet. One has to do with the concept of capping this fund. Right now, as it's designed, this thing will fill as long as the back of money is piped into it. And we can discuss that at some point. And then the second one, I actually have some people from the Treasury to discuss. I'd like to have a discussion about, which is sort of an overarching policy discussion about how we can, and in this case, I'd like to try to securitize the fund, i.e. sell some of the tobacco settlement. And I think that's a very worthy discussion relative to this bill, because this bill will take either proceeds as they come in, or we can at the state look at selling a good portion of it, as has been outlined by the state treasurer's office, to use, and then we can make the policy decisions as is outlined here in 2007 as to how we're going to be using some of that. I think it's worth our time to try to have a brief discussion about what the treasurer's idea is and get that before us, and I'd like to offer it as an amendment. I guess that would be on Thursday. That, again, is not ready. So whatever your wishes are, there are people here from the treasury that can talk about that briefly, and I do think it's germane to how we treat tobacco fund and how we're going to fund the fund. So it could be today, it could be Thursday. whatever.
Why don't we let them come up for a few minutes? They are enlisted, because we will invite them.
Thank you. Thank you.
And of course, when we start this off, we can explain the ideas that have been developed. You can introduce yourself to the record and proceed.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chuck Smith, and I'm the Director of Debt Management with the Oregon State Treasury.
For the record, Marion Guest, also with Oregon State Treasury.
And Mr. Chair, we're actually just standing by to really field questions with respect to tobacco, tobacco bonds, tobacco settlements. I'm not sure what the pleasure of the chair is here with respect to what you'd like to know about that generally or more specifically.
Mr. Edwards,
I guess it was my indication. What I'd like to see if you could do is just sort of broadly outline sort of the idea of the policy choice for the state. One would be to have the settlement money come in, or as the treasurer has indicated, one way, another policy choice for us as a legislature is to actually go out and sell part of that to the marketplace. And just conceptually, so the committee understands when I bring this amendment, what it is that why you need this legislative authority if we want to go down that path as a state to securitize this in some way.
Sure.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Marion Guest again. When we approached and talked to Representative Simmons and some of the other committee members about securitization of tobacco money, it was with the intent of capitalizing on the money up front, getting more dollars up front to you right now that you could use for different programs. And also with the idea behind the Health Security Fund was to, it was a savings account. Invest the money. Unfortunately, you cannot invest it in stock. It'll be invested in bonds, et cetera. It'll make about 5% return. But we thought if you put more money into the fund up front, then you could return more money out. It would be a bigger return for you. And it would also, when you securitize the dollars, you do not have to then risk the funds not being there in the future. If tobacco revenues were to go down, if the federal government could in any way intercede, you have captured that money, and the risk is not to the state. So you have you're paying a higher interest rate to capture the money up front at today's market value, and then you can invest it. And unless you go to the ballot, you will not be able to invest it in stock. You have to go to a constitutional change on that to really make some money off of it. Can I give you a little bit more information?
Yeah. Could you just explain briefly why you need legislation to do that? You don't have the authority, as I understand it, to do that right now. Is that correct?
That is correct, Representative Edwards.
Mr. Byer?
Excuse me. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the state were to do this, and I think I understand what you're talking about, I'm going to describe it as future, that we sell a potential $2 billion settlement today for X amount of dollars, and if the money comes in, it would go to whoever we sell it to, but the risk would be on them as to whether or not the money comes in or not. My question would be, first of all, is that a fairly simplified version of what you're talking about?
That's correct.
Okay. My question would be, how many cents on the dollar do you think we could get today if we were to sell settlements?
Well, perhaps I could handle that question. There's always a cost to essentially either accelerating payments or borrowing money. This happens to be a case of accelerating tobacco payments that are going to be due over a 25-year period. The Treasurer proposed that $400 million in proceeds value of bonds be sold, and that's going to require the sale of about $450 million worth of bonds, and we're going to have to pay back those $450 million worth of bonds through the future payments of tobacco from the tobacco manufacturers. So the question is, what's the cost of doing that? What's the cost of accelerating your payments today? And the cost is the interest rate involved in selling those securities. So you say, well, gee, what does that mean? Okay, well, if we sold them on a tax-exempt basis, we're looking at interest rates of about 5.5%, say, as an estimate, 5.75% on an annual basis. So that's really your cost. You're looking at, I'm going to pay about 5.75% plus the principal back. So that's the cost involved, plus the cost to issue the securities. So let's put it on the Treasurer had proposed a system where we would receive $400 million in proceeds. We need to sell about $450 million in bonds to raise $400 million plus about a 10% reserve. And then we need to pay interest back over 20 years. So if you take a look at that and using that scheme, the interest is about $375 million over that 20-year period.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Byer.
Simple layman terms, and what I hear you saying is in order to get $400 million today, you'd have to sell up about $850 million of future money. So it's about just about 50 cents on the dollar.
That's about $825 million, that's correct.
But Mr. Chair, Representative Byers, there's also today money. You have money up front today to spend versus money in 20 years that is not going to be worth the same amount of money.
Thank you, Representative Byers. Representative Devlin.
That cost would be based, as you've indicated, on the risk for the bondholders because their security would be basically the tax settlement. They would not have the full faith and credit of the state. By way of comparison, if we were issuing $450 million in bonds that were full faith and credit of the state, what would the interest rate be at this point?
Mr. Chair, Representative Devlin, the interest rate, if we were using the full faith and credit general obligation bond rating in the state with the same kind of structure for the same dollar amount, the interest rate probably would be about 5-10 or something like that.
Well, we had one. Mm-hmm. What difference would that make over the 20-year period, that difference in interest, just roughly?
Oh, gosh. Easily use a calculator to figure that out. Well, I guess we're looking at 10% reduction in interest rates at 50 some basis points if you're figuring 575. So, you know, that's 10 to 15% reduction in interest rates.
One follow-up question. It would appear to me because of there is a difference, but a relatively modest difference, that the purchasers of these must not view them as being that high of a risk. And we've had a lot of testimony that we should consider the receipt of these funds relatively high risk. Can you explain why there is the difference between what the perception in the market might be for these bonds versus what the perception is given to the legislature about the high risk of counting on this money in the future?
Well, I think this gets back to the old thing in the marketplace, you know, differences of opinion, that's what makes markets. There's two sides to every equation here. I think a lot of the risks that we're looking at today, individuals are probably just as capable of making some sort of decision as they would be either if they were involved in the financial markets or not. For instance, in your own life, you have experience with smoking risk. You've watched the court cases come and go. You've watched Congress come and go. So you probably have some opinion on what that might mean for the future ability of tobacco companies to make payments over 25 years. So in that respect, I think everybody probably has some basis for making a judgment determining the risk on the bonds. I think the Treasurer feels that over the next 25 years that these payments are not particularly likely to be sustained for that period of time, given what's happened in the tobacco business over the last few years.
Final question.
Beaver.
If the holders of bond security would be the tobacco settlement, would they ask for anything potentially in terms of, well, I don't know exactly how to phrase it, any opt-out clause in the sense of, Would they be willing to take the full risk, or, you know, I mean, would they want some exemption in there for federal action, which we don't anticipate now, some exemption in there for
No, their sole source of security, their sole source of security is going to be the tobacco payments. The state will not be liable in any way, shape, or form for these bonds. There'll be no moral obligation, no general obligation, no any obligation. And that's going to be clearly structured into the legal documents. It's going to be clearly understood by the purchasers of these securities.
Mr. Chairman, a clarification of this. Does the state treasurer, would the state treasurer, if we chose to go this route, have the option of setting what the interest rate would be, or would that actually be marketplace? So you don't, if there is the risk that the potential there, I would assume that interest rate would be much higher.
Representative Meyer, the marketplace sets the interest rates, and it's our job to arm wrestle the last few basis points out of the underwriters to make sure that we get the best possible interest rate. The general interest rate levels are set in the marketplace and highly liquid broad markets. It's not set by the Treasury.
So just a clarification. So your best guess that the interest rate would be about 5.75 is strictly at that right now, I guess.
For the tax-exempt portion of these.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you. Just to clarify, too, there is a market for this, is there not? And are other states looking at this?
Well, Representative Edwards, the fact is that no tobacco bonds have been sold yet, and there's a lot of folks taking a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Because based upon the master settlement agreement, which was actually just signed in November, this is a new area for the marketplace. But it's very similar to a lot of transactions by the billions of dollars that take place on a week-by-week basis in the market. The securitization transactions and revenue bond transactions, both very similar to what we're proposing here, are done by the billions of dollars every week in the marketplace. So on one hand, the use of tobacco revenue stream is a new endeavor. A number of states are taking a look at it. A number of municipalities, including New York City, for instance, are taking a look at it. What we're doing here is a common market technique with a new revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
Just a comment that personally I think there's a lot of common sense to looking at this, because there, again, this can be done. It is, I think, a prudent way to go about it. We can discuss how large amount you want to take of the $2 billion. I think there is some uncertainty about the long term. I read in the paper recently about how Exxon is trying to get out of this settlement, since they get out, but it's trying to stop making payments on the Valdez and put it in the Wasser. So I'm not saying that will happen, but over time, I think it is fair to say that it's uncertain. And I guess there's sort of a little bird in hand potential here that I think is very attractive. And even if you went with the treasurer's idea or something more, something less, you still get money coming in from the settlement in addition. So this isn't an all or nothing as a resident buyer. I mean, that is one strategy. You could try to do the whole thing, but you're probably looking more like a 25 cents or less on the dollar as you stretch the payments out. You're looking for them much longer. Again, I just like to have the committee to entertain that amendment when I bring it.
This is Beck. Maybe Representative Edwards can help, or the folks at the Treasurer's Office. So if we do this bonding scenario and we get $400 million now, we're paying off for 20 years, is there a proposal in your amendment or from you that are going to say where this money would go?
No. Mr. Chair, if I may respond to that. And that's why I wanted to bring this here, because this bill actually addresses the policy of how we start. The Treasurer's Office put together $200 million to go into this fund immediately under their proposal. I'm not arguing that's what we would do as a committee, but I'm suggesting how we fund this fund right now is just through payments. And I'm just suggesting that maybe before we make that first step, we should figure out how we're going to get those payments. And this is, that's how we use the money. That's up to us.
Mr. Chair,
mm-hmm.
Even when you borrow money, it's for long-term permanent improvements. You don't borrow money to pay for a one-year operating cost, typically. And before we talk about borrowing money, I'd kind of like to know, some of these amendments
have clear dedications of the money. Some may make more or less sense than others. But I'd like to know if we're going to borrow money, that we're considering putting it into long-term capital improvement for investment.
Again, if you look at what, thank you, Mr. Chair, what we're doing in this bill is we're setting up some fund, right, for the long term to meet long term needs. I think using these proceeds in this manner is appropriate. I think their proposal had a similar fund. I think it was this fund, in addition to some education dollars, and then another economic stabilization fund, which is another concept that a few of us on this committee have also brought before us. So, and again, I think the policy discussion about how you fill those pots or what we do with the money is amongst us. But I think the first thing is, how are we going to get this money? And I'm just suggesting this is a very viable alternative for us to consider.
Thanks, Mr.
Chair. I just want to clarify in my own mind. We get money up front, $400 million. That money can be invested at a higher rate. Is that correct? No.
You're saying you invest? No. Mr. Representative Stark, you can only invest it in what we call the. You only earn about 5%. You can't invest it in stock, so you're not going out there to make a lot of money with this investment, unless you go to a constitutional change.
So that's where the constitutional change comes in.
In order to invest it in stock and make some serious money on it, you would have to go to constitutional change.
That is in effect, regardless of whether or not we go up and get a lump sum up front.
Right.
If we get the money coming in, we still have to, we can only invest it in a,
right.
In those kind of tools that generate a little bit, not as much as just money. Okay. Thank you.
This is Deborah.
Thank you. Have you done an analysis that would show, in terms of this $400 million, which you're selling $450 million in bonds for, which ultimately you'll be paying $825 million, it'll be future dollars, so it'll have less value. And I understand that in the Treasurer's proposal, $200 million of it, I can say it here, I mean, there's no secret, is probably K-12, and $200 million is for, I think it's been referred to as a health trust fund, similar in nature. Well, there's $825 million here. This is $200 million that will generate interest, even if it is at a modest level. So you still will have the operating revenues from that interest being generated offsetting the $825. So somebody should have an analysis of this showing what the overall cost of it is. And the other thing, just more of a comment than anything else, I mean, I think it's all in the eye of the beholder. I mean, I can make a case, you talk about capital improvements, some people may look at those as buildings or things of that nature. Investing in the future of children is, in a sense, a long-term investment. Preventing people from smoking, whether it's cessation and prevention, is a long-term investment in terms of preventing long-term health costs. So, they're more of a statement, but somebody, you must have an analysis of this that you'll share with the committee sometime in the future. I'm sure you've had your briefings, I know that.
we'll be happy to share that.
We will share that. But, Mr. Chairman, Representative Devlin, if I may, when we started working with Representative Simmons on this idea, it was concerning just the health security fund and saying, well, if you're going to channel the money, the tobacco settlement, into this fund, let's do it in a way that is more productive for the state. And we believe securitization is more productive. You get more money up front. You have, it's secure money. It's not going to go away for us. And then we can invest it, and then we use it to fund services that are currently being needed right now. But more money up front meant more money that you could spend off in interest that is going to fund the services. And then we went one step further and we talked about the budget stabilization fund, which you could still fund the, you could give, I think we talked about $300 million to the health security fund, and you could spend off money to the budget stabilization fund in cash payments. You don't bond to that. because we believe that Oregon has a real problem and that we are not set up for the future when the economy slows or turns, we're in trouble. And we've got to have money to provide. And then we went a step further after that and we talked about, well, if we could securitize more money, could we put some money aside for education? And you're correct. How we described that for education was that the money could be used for books, for computers, for a variety of things that you don't think of as just like buildings. So we looked at it as a long-term commitment to education. They were for long-term items. We've got somewhat of a warm reception on the Senate side for this idea. We talked to the governor about this idea. We talked to you folks about this idea. But I think why we're here today is for one reason, and it is to ask you to say that financially it makes more sense to securitize the tobacco payments than not, no matter what you use it for. If you're going to use it for just the health care portion, or you're going to use it for education or the budget stabilization fund, it just makes good financial sense to do that.
For the questions or comments from the committee? Thank you.
Thank you for coming up today. And any of you that does listen to us,
just like to comment on this whole idea.
Before you leave,
no, not I don't have questions for them.
No questions for them, okay.
I'm talking about the whole bill, 2007. I think it's important that we look at the issues that have been brought to us before, that we try to include in this package smoking prevention issues. Are really important. We have programs in this state that are working right now where dollars are being spent, and we're making progress in the area, and I think that a portion of those dollars need to go there. I'm also privileged to sit on a way from the committee where I deal with the housing issues. Affordable housing is not getting funded, and this is an opportunity to fund affordable housing. And senior disabled transportation as well. It's an opportunity that we have for these dollars to fund those programs that aren't getting sufficiently funded in other budgets in this state. So that's why I know that's been talked about in this committee, but just to bring it back to the surface.
Mm-hmm. This is Byer.
Just here, I was on Beck Ruff. I was just going to point out to him that he's obviously never been involved in farming operations. They think people don't borrow money for day-to-day operations.
Okay, we will, just a comment from members of the committee. If you have some amendments, get them to me very quickly. And we'll sit down and visit about them a little bit. And I do want to move this bill on Thursday this week. We'll close the work session in House Bill 2007, and we will get to leave just momentarily. And we will adjourn.